This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today my guest on Off the Shelf is Tony Fuller. Tony is a principal with Baker Tilly, and Tony heads up Baker Tilly's government contractor advisory services practice here in Washington, D.C. And Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Roger. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to this conversation, Tony. It could get a little geeky on us, but that's okay. I'm a procurement geek, but we're going to talk a fair amount about GSA schedules, the pricing issues, and particularly the negotiation of pricing and all the things that are going on at GSA around services, in particular on GSA schedules. But first, I wanted to talk a little bit about you, or give you an opportunity to talk a little bit about yourself there, Tony. Can you give the listeners a little bit of your background and your role at Baker Tilly?
Sure. Thank you, Roger. Well, I have over 20 years' experience providing a wide range of services to government contractors.
Well, hey Tony, you know what? You don't look your age, man. You are a young-looking guy. So
I started out in boutique firms, actually helping government contractors with claims and disputes, and then More recently, I've worked for large, major accounting and consulting firms, assisting contractors in a wide range of areas. For many years now, I've led Baker Tilly's government contractor practice, and we have a large team, and we provide a wide range of services, not just those that we're here about today, but just to give you some context, we help contractors with cost accounting, pricing, contract management, compliance. We support them during government audits, and we also do a fair amount of dispute and litigation consulting. One area for me that I've been particularly focused on now for about 15 years, most of my career in government contracts has been in the area of commercial item contracting and GSA, Federal Supply Schedule Program pricing. I know that's what we're here to talk about today, and many of my clients are very focused in this area, sell a lot through the schedules and our services contractors, so I think it's a great topic to talk about.
I'm looking forward to that conversation. You talk a little bit about, you've been doing this for 15 years. Can you talk a little bit about, I know your firm as a whole has a great deal of experience with the pricing policy and procedures and the negotiation at GSAs. Can you just, let's give a flavor of that, and then we'll get right into the issues.
Sure. Yeah. We do have tens of thousands of hours assisting contractors. We do a lot on the front end with pricing strategy and negotiations, but we also do a lot on the back end, as I mentioned, in, you know, supporting contractors during audits and DOJ investigations, and those kind of feed off one another in terms of what we see in terms of best practices that I'll be able to share a little bit today. Our projects, just to give you a sense for where we operate and where we help our contractor clients, is large proposal preparation efforts. And as you know, there's the Federal Supply Schedule Program has five-year option periods, and so we help companies get those options awarded.
Right, and especially those companies who have been lucky enough to be selected for one of those, what they call the pre-award audits of the option period, right?
So, that's right. Many of the larger contractors especially are chosen for the pre-award audits, and so we work with government contractors, GSA schedule contractors in that area. A lot of times, though, we'll also just get called because they want us to do an internal compliance review. Business practices change over time, and these are long-term contracts, so it's important to do that. And then on the back end, when things don't go so well, we do get involved with both pre-award and post-award audits, which we'll probably talk a little bit more about later. Mm-hmm. And of course, we also get involved when, you know, the Department of Justice comes in for False Claims Act investigations as well. So we do detailed pricing analysis. We help prepare disclosures so that they're current, accurate, and complete. And we do a variety of other types of analyses to help contractors maximize their use of the schedule and stay out of trouble, so to speak.
Hey, you mentioned something there that I just have to comment on, that, and I've always got a chuckle out of it, is, you know, they call it a GSA, only a GSA in the GSA world, I guess. So I'm not going to pick on them too much today, but, you know, only there will you call a audit after 5 years of performance, a pre-award audit, right, of the option period, which goes to my, you know, my first question for you, are just talking about, that anomaly in and of itself, I think, you know, is symbolic of a policy that's somewhat out of date, and especially out of date vis-a-vis services or the growth of services on the schedules, the pricing policy and the rules around it. So can you talk a bit about the current state of play with GSA pricing policy?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I could give a little bit of a history, but frankly, I'm not sure if there are that many milestones in the last 15 or 20 years, or perhaps even longer. Really, the policy today is much what it was previously. And the thing that's interesting is over time, you know, generally the GSA schedule is a little bit better suited for products, not so much services, particularly in today's world. But what we've seen over the last 10, 15 years or more too is that the services have become much more popular. So it's only amplified, you know, some of the challenges that are out there in the market today.
Yeah, I think services are 60 to 65% of the total scheduled volume right now. And you made a great point about, you know, there have been a lot of milestones. I think they did update the ordering procedures to reflect competition requirements, statutory competition requirements, which further made this policies out of date, further out of date, I guess, so to speak, or even more antiquated. You know, to those points, it seems to me, can you talk a little bit about just how the framework works and what goes on there? So then we get into some
real
detailed stuff.
Yeah, sorry, Roger, to interrupt. Yeah, I think we can at a high level. I know we'll probably talk about this in some detail later, but, you know, essentially GSA's goal is to negotiate the best pricing it can, just like any other entities that's out there contracting. There are some specific terms of art here, and one of them is most favored customer. And so their goal is to seek most favored customer pricing, but there is some confusion out in the market as to whether that has to be the lowest price or not. And the way that they get at that information is they require a contractor, before being awarded a federal supply schedule contract, to submit what they call a commercial sales practices disclosure. And that requires a contractor to essentially describe how it sells its products and services commercially. And so that's how they get comfortable pre-award that the prices are fair and reasonable. Now, post-award, they have something called the price reduction clause, which is a topic near and dear to both of our hearts, I believe. And a lot of people spend a lot of time talking about the price reductions clause, but just at a high level here, what that is once you have pricing established and the contract's awarded, how does it stay fair and reasonable throughout the life of a very, very long contract? And the mechanism that GSA chose is the price reduction clause. And essentially, in a nutshell, what that is prior to award, you're going to pick a customer or a group of customers that will be your tracking customer, or what some people call basis of award customer or customer group. And over time, your pricing to GSA is measured against the pricing to the tracking customer. And during contract performance, if you offer a better discount, a deeper discount, or a better price to that basis of award, then it could, but for some exceptions and perhaps what's been specifically negotiated by the contractor and GSA, it could trigger a price reduction, which means that the contractor has to offer that same pricing to the government essentially for the same period of time. So pre-award, you have a wide range of disclosures that many contractors are challenged with. And then post-award, you have the price reduction clause. And those are the two primary aspects of the pricing policy under the GSA schedule program.
Well, you know, one thing I know you and I have talked a lot about is the outdated nature of the policy really hasn't been fundamentally changed for about 40 years. I mean, Carolyn Alston worked on an update of the policies back in the early 90s, but fundamentally the pricing policy hasn't, from its philosophical view and implementation, hasn't really fundamentally changed for that long. And as you made the note, that's sort of written around products. Can
Right.
you talk about why the current policy doesn't really fit well for services in particular?
Yeah, it is interesting.
But you know, that's a sort of a trick question, because we do have to take a break, Tony. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Tony Fuller. Tony is a principal at Baker Tilly, and he heads up Baker Tilly's government advisory services practice. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Tony Fuller. Tony is a principal with Baker Tilly, and he heads up Baker Tilly's government contractor advisory services practice here in Washington, D.C. And Tony, when we took the break, I was about to ask you to get in depth, why the current policy really doesn't fit well for services. But I think As a threshold, or to set that, you know, set the stage for that, can we talk a little? Can you talk a little bit about the differences between products and services from a, you know, pricing perspective, and what those challenges bring to GSA?
Sure. We talk a lot about the square peg into the round hole, and how services fits within the pricing policy and the GSA,
or doesn't fit, right?
Or doesn't fit within the, you know, the current contracting model. And starting, I think it's great to start to talk about products versus services. So why products fit relatively well into the GSA contracting model is because they have a list price, usually. There are usually defined discounts from list that a manufacturer of products may offer varying discounts to different customer categories, and they may also have non-standard discounts or deviations within certain policies or thresholds that they have. So generally, the GSA pricing policies fit that model much better because those terms like list price, discount, customer categories, standard discounts, those are some of the key elements that go into how you disclose your practices, as well as what the auditors do when they audit those practices.
You know, Tony, when you say that, describe it, I think about, you know, buying a car. Those are all terms when you're buying a thing. You know, you can think about what's the list price, what the manufacturer's suggested retail price. You know, what are the discounts are being offered, or the concessions, or, you know, and the warranty. All those kind of things go to products, and they do. And that language, to your point, is that's the way the regulations are written.
Right. And but yet now we have services, and especially the way services have evolved over time. And so when you go back to those things like a list price, for example, with services, a lot of services companies don't really have a list price. If they do, it's certainly not published. They might have some internal price list that they use for various purposes, but that's the first issue that can be a problem. And that's because the GSA contracting officers want to see what your discounts are from that list price. And so if you don't have a list price, and then if you really don't have standard practices around discounts, which many professional services firms don't, a lot of times in the products world, you could have discounts for distributors or resellers or national accounts. In the services world, it can be about volume and there can be some discounting, but at the same time, the pricing and discounting practices are not nearly as defined. And so to try to disclose what your practices are within the current model makes that very difficult for contractors. And also then they talk about standard discounts versus non-standard. And that's a key area that really causes a lot of contractors problems down the road when they don't do that thoroughly. And sometimes companies will have standard discounts that will, for example, require approvals and things of that nature when the discounts are deeper. But oftentimes, the services are priced based on the unique circumstances of the project. Where is it? What are the risks? What are the opportunities? How ready is the customer ready to be served in this way? There could be any variety of issues that come into play here for services contractors that make it very difficult to fully disclose and then mitigate risk down the road if you're a services contractor. And so lots of challenges. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the nuances here, but, you know, many issues that I think particularly service contractors have to be particularly in tune with versus even the normal challenges associated with products contracting under the Federal Supply Schedule program.
Yeah. Now, you know, I was at GSA when services were first added to the schedules, and it seemed pretty straightforward back in the mid-90s, you know, saying, you know, you had labor rates, you put them on a contract, you know, that's sort of the benchmark that you look at. But, you know, it's one of the things, you know, that I think has changed. Also, you've described great description of the differences between products, but the services market itself has evolved or changed over time, too, that I think is just exacerbated. I can't even say it. You know, has made it worse. Has made it worse with regard to the disconnect between the policy, you know, and the commercial market for services. So can you talk a little bit about how services have evolved? Have you seen what you see?
Yeah, you know, I am a professional services provider myself, so I live it good. As well as I work with many, many large contractors.
Are you on the schedule?
Yeah. So, you know, I will talk about it a little bit. I mean, generally, the world has become more complex and more specialized. So, you know, rather than staff augmentation or other jobs that are just like, hey, this person doing this job at this rate, it's much more around solutions and complex solutions out in the marketplace that could involve a variety of different types of services, a variety of different types of skills, all working together for a common objective, not just to achieve something on a recurring basis, but a special project that requires, you know, specific requirements to be met by the customer. Over the years, I believe that the solutions have become more complex, and also as a result, the pricing's become more complex, and it's not quite as straightforward as it used to be. I think that's true in the products world as well.
Oh, absolutely.
But certainly in the services world, it has, and so there's even less reliance on any sort of standard price list, and it's really more about what price will the market bear based on the particular circumstances of a project opportunity. And I think that's why we see, you know, prices can vary significantly for solutions, whereas you try to break it down to that common denominator, which is the hourly unit labor price.
Sure.
And what is that price? And so, you know, there's been a variety of issues out there. Another thing that I think is that the government is buying many more services. Their needs are also more complex. And so when you overlay the current model, which really hasn't changed for services in the GSA, on top of that, it kind of spells, you know, challenges not only for the contractor, but also for GSA and the GSA's customers, the buying agencies as well.
Yeah, you know, that's a great, I mean, that's that description. So when you're describing that, I'm thinking, well, how do you unpack that price, you know, to the way GSA is structured now and what they look at with the policy, it's like pulling apart the complexity to try to disclose labor rates or whatever to be able to have them on a contract. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, different people may price their services different ways. And one of the fundamental, I guess, one of the cornerstones of the GSA schedule program is to get the best pricing based on the pricing practices of that particular contractor and what they do in the commercial market. And so sometimes, you know, even though this is commercial item contracting, it's not quite as commercial as it is for that contractor's commercial clients. And so there are always differences. And for contractors to try to move from the commercial world over into the federal world and fit their offerings into the GSA model can be very challenging.
Right. Well, you know, when you describe that, I also started thinking about another subject that's, you know, near and dear to my heart, and that the idea of standardized labor categories. That seems to be, to me, to the point about, you know, you propose consistent with your commercial practices. That seems to me even a greater amplification of an outdated approach to it that would limit complexity and innovation. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, standardized labor categories, which essentially means, you know, the government may issue a particular labor category description for a project manager that requires a four-year degree, a project management professional certification, and perhaps, you know, 2 years experience. And then all contractors would bid for that particular labor category. And that is not the way that hardly any of those contractors may do business commercially. Sure, a project manager is a common labor category, but not all labor categories are common and different
or people, created equal, right?
Or created equal, and different people, different companies use their labor categories and price their work in a variety of ways based on, for example, the resource mix or, you know, the staffing mix for a particular project. That can have a huge impact into the portfolio of skills needed for that project as well as how it's priced commercially.
Right. You know, to me, you know, standardized labor categories are low price, technically acceptable by other means.
Yeah.
That's me talking, Tony.
Yeah.
So, but right now we do have to take a break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Tony Fuller. Tony is a principal with Baker Tilly. He heads up Baker Tilly's Government Contractor Advisory Services practice. And when we come back, we'll start by talking a little bit about some of these various efforts to try to address the outdated policy that have gone on over the last few years, like there's the MES panel, GSAR rewrite that got started and stopped, and now I think is back on. They call it schedules modernization these days, and as well as SARA panel recommendations. Just talk about a few of those things, then we'll move on to some of the pre-award challenges, those pre-award audits of post-award, you know, option periods. So, and you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Tony Fuller. Tony is a principal at Baker Tilly, and Tony heads up Baker Tilly's Government Contractor Advisory Services practice. And Tony, when we took the break, I had mentioned that I was going to get you to give your take a little bit on, you know, MAS panel, the multiple award schedule panel that was back in, about 2006, 2007, that, or maybe even a little after that, maybe 2008. You know, the SARA panel made some recommendations about an unpriced pilot schedule kind of thing. So where are we on all this stuff? I know they started a G, I have to mention the GSAR rewrite, which they started, I think, when I was still at GSA, and or the idea was born then, and it still hasn't really happened. It's in the process, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, there have been several efforts to improve the Federal Supply Schedule Program for both contractors and GSA and the government users, all in good faith, and there's been a lot of good ideas out there over the years. You know, the SARA panel, I think maybe started off most recently, not going back too far, but going back maybe 10 years or so, where there were some good observations around pilot schedules and other things to try different things to see what worked under the Federal Supply Schedules Program, knowing that they may not have the perfect solution from the start. But then the multiple award schedule, MAS panel was formed, and that was in the late 2000s, maybe 2008. I think the report didn't come out until 2010. It took a little while to get that report out. But again, I thought that there were several good recommendations provided at that time to GSA for consideration in terms of not only products, but also a lot of services issues were closely examined because they really started bubbling up to the surface. And kind of concurrent with that, they did undertake the GSAR rewrite. So they were beginning to rewrite some of the key regulations around pricing. And then that came to an abrupt halt when they really tried to address some of the core of the commercial sales practices, disclosures and such. And then even more recently, Roger, I know that, you know, there's been continued discussions to try to provide the contractor perspective so that GSA maintains a balanced approach to how it designs changes and tries to move forward. And so, you know, and I know the latest, which I was a part of, was the coalition white paper on multiple award schedule pricing policy, which I believe we just got out last year, if I'm not mistaken. And so there's been a lot of efforts, but fundamentally, the outcome has been somewhat superficial in some ways. They're not really addressing the core issues that are out there, whether they be pre-award pricing analysis issues or pricing disclosure issues or post-award contractual, you know, compliance issues when it comes to the price reduction clause. And I'm sure we're probably going to talk about some of those coming up here.
So. All right. So, well, yeah, well, why don't we get into some of those things and we can talk about it, about what those challenges are specifically and just also your observations on what some best practices for companies and addressing offerors or contractors and addressing those things. You know, and it gets to the fundamentals that commercial sales, you know, the first stage, right, is commercial sales practices format, submitting all that information and all the language around it, which you so accurately pointed out is really written around products, you know, when you talk about discounts and price lists and stuff. But can you talk about, you know, that area where, you know, you see pitfalls for companies that they need to think about?
Yeah. I do break down GSA contracting into pre-award and post-award, and I like to think of things that way. I've always been convinced that if we could get the pre-award part right, which is what I also tell my contractor clients, to spend the time and effort up front to do what's necessary to provide current, accurate, and complete information. And that's what the government is seeking, and that's really what the contractor is required to do, is to be thorough and detailed in its disclosures. And so a couple of things we'll talk about are applicable to services contractors, but they're actually applicable to all GSA schedule contractors. It's just that the services contractors tend to have a variety of other challenges, as we talked about with the square peg round hole. Now, one of them, as we talked about, when we talk about list price and when we talk about varying discounting practices and when we talk about, do services contractors really even think of their customers in different categories? Many do not. And so, you know, that also doesn't really fit the pre-award pricing policy in contracting model. So there's a variety of issues. And what we say, because things aren't so well defined always with services companies, you have to do a pricing analysis to know what your pricing practices are. And I find that a lot of contractors really appreciate having the insight into that type of detail, because it allows them to maybe produce better policies going forward than they have currently, which will help them comply. But it also helps them describe specifically what their practices are and what their practices aren't. And since there aren't so many standard practices, but really there's a lot of unique pricing for unique project opportunities, as we talked about, it's important to thoroughly disclose the types of circumstances that can come up. So you're almost finding yourself talking more about what your non-standard practices are than your standard practices, which is one of the challenges that services contractors have with GSA.
So what you guys will do, you'll go in and do an analysis, historical pricing analysis of, you know, the labor that's provided for solutions and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
To help the companies and do some data mining.
That's right. That's right. We do a fair amount of work in that regard. And for services contractors, again, that even getting the data can be difficult because, you know, commercially companies are offering their services not only on a time and materials basis, but on a fixed price basis. And so extracting the data from the system tends to be harder. It's hard for many companies, but it's very difficult for a services contractor to mine the data that it needs to do the analysis so that it can fully disclose its practices, whether it be because a large portion of their work is fixed price or whether it be just because of some of the data constraints or system constraints that they have. It actually makes it unduly burdensome to really disclose in the way that GSA seeks their services contractors disclose.
So you've done all this analysis for them. You know, I think it's a great point that you get it right up front in terms of negotiating the contract. You create a framework for success as the contractor. Are there any couple of the keys there to creating that framework?
Yeah. You know, one of the things is you have to think about what's going to happen post-award, pre-award. So you have to go into this with a strategy, because you want to make sure not only that you can get a contract awarded, but that you can actually comply with it when the contract's awarded. And so one of the key things there we mentioned earlier was the price reduction clause. And one of the best practices is to actually do that historical pricing analysis that allows you to better understand who some of your similarly situated customers are, so that you can propose something that's going to give GSA a reasonable amount of assurance it needs for fair and reasonable prices, while also being something that you can actually live with down the road. GSA often will seek the broadest, largest group of customers it can to provide greater security, so to speak. However, a contractor wants to really narrow that basis of award.
Right, this is for the price reduction clause purposes.
Yeah, that's right, for price reduction clause purposes. And the key is that you have to do that up front. You can't let GSA try to determine and determine for you what that is. You need to do that pricing analysis so that you can not only propose a basis of award customer for price reduction purposes post-award, but also have a couple fallback positions so that during negotiations you're well prepared to, you know, get the contract awarded in a way that's going to make sense for you.
Right. And is that part of that, doing that analysis? You mentioned, you know, the similarly situated customers. That's important, right? Because the regulations provide that you don't necessarily have to get the most favorite customer price, but you get pricing that's, you know, you can take into consideration, you know, customers who have been similarly situated, have similar terms and conditions, that sort of thing, to try to, you know, say, okay, this is who you are most like government, right? Is that right?
That's right. That's right. And, you know, we, again, mentioned most favored customer pricing. And, you know, a lot of times what happens is GSA really believes that under all circumstances, it should get the lowest price, no matter how commercial transactions may differ from GSA transactions or any other number of issues. And so, you know, looking at your pricing, you have to fully disclose your pricing. And a lot of times now, whereas they had the commercial sales practices format, and that at least allowed some flexibility, although there needs to be greater clarity around some of the terms of this commercial sales practices disclosures, it provided some flexibility to describe what your practices are. Unfortunately, many times the GSA will not put much weight in how those difference, how, you know, how those practices differ, and then try to, you know, get you to actually complete supplemental forms that actually makes you show what is your lowest rate that you ever charge for a senior engineer or a project manager or a financial analyst. And as we mentioned, there are some challenges with that because of the unique nature of services for each of the opportunities. And so most favored customer, best price, you just have to fully disclose, and then you have to be and have your own strategy with respect to what price you're willing to accept and go in and negotiate accordingly.
You know, there's also a problem with those forms. They really haven't gone through any kind of rulemaking process or Paperwork Reduction Act sort of thing. I can say all that, Tony. You don't have to. But it's true. It's and it goes to your point about square peg in a round hole. They're trying to make adjustments on the fly without going through the rulemaking process because the policy is outdated, which is not fundamentally, you know, inconsistent with, you know, the way our rules and our system is supposed to work. And that's me talking, Tony. But we do have to take our last break, Tony. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Tony Fuller. Tony is a principal at Baker Tilly, and he heads up Baker Tilly's Government Contractor Advisory Services practice here in Washington, D.C. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM today. My guest is Tony Fuller. Tony is a principal at Baker Tilly, and Tony heads up Baker Tilly's Government Contractor Advisory Services practice here in Washington, D.C. And Tony, we have been talking about some of the challenges and best practices, things you need to think about pre-award. Again, only in a GSA world of government contracts or schedules would post-award challenges include pre-award audits. So, hey, can you talk a little bit about some of the post-award challenges, you know, you and how they are so tied together? It's how you frame your contract, what you're tracking customer, the points you made in the last segment. It really impacts a lot of what you deal with in a compliance world post-award. But can you talk about, you know, I guess the pre-award audit process a little bit, and then some of the key issues and best practices?
Sure. Yeah. So GSA contract is essentially 20 years, and that's a 5-year base term and 3 5-year options. And so every time that one of the 5-year options comes up, a contractor has to resubmit its commercial sales practices essentially. And that's a good thing because businesses change, sales practices change. And so, you know, a contractor should step back at that point and consider it a best practice to actually assess its pricing again, update its disclosures, and then, you know, move forward with another 5-year period. What happens in terms of the audits at GSA, there are pre-award and there are post-award. And what a pre-award audit is whether it's a new proposal or more frequently in connection with an option extension, when a contractor submits its updated commercial sales practices disclosures, then it may be chosen for what they call a pre-award audit. Even though the contract has already been awarded and ongoing, it's really a pre-award for the upcoming option period.
Right.
And so if you're selected in that way, then what the IG does is they will look at your disclosures and your submission, and then they'll essentially ask you for a year's worth of data and a whole lot of other things that you have to supply to them so that they can do their analysis. And the stated objective of a pre-award is that allows the IG auditors to provide advice and counsel to the contracting officer regarding the fairness or reasonableness of the pricing, as well as whether the basis of award is sufficient or if there are other issues that the IG picks up on during the audit.
Right. So it's almost like it's a unilateral right, but it's almost a renegotiation of your contract at a 5-year period, especially if you've been chosen to have the audit, right?
Right. Yeah, it is. And so that's why we recommend as a best practice about a year before you come up for your option extension, go ahead and pull some of the data, do a pricing analysis, see whether and how your pricing practices may have evolved over the current contract period, and really do a thorough job and get your ducks in a row and submit a very good option package that updates your disclosures very thoroughly. If you do that, then if you're audited, you're in really good shape. If you don't do that and you're audited, then you have a lot less credibility, and it can lead to other problems down the road if they believe that you weren't actually in compliance with the contract during the current period.
So you've gone through that audit, you've done that price. Can you talk a little bit about some of the other best practices during contract performance?
Yeah.
I know one of the things you guys talk a lot about is the compliance program itself.
Yeah. I think many contractors now get it, but even though it's a more streamlined fashion to do business with the federal government, there still are a fair number of compliance requirements. And in the area of services, it's as important, if not more important, than even products. So some of the best practices we see is the way that a company has its labor established in its HR system could be very different than the labor categories it actually provides to its commercial customers, which could be very different than the labor categories they offer under the GSA schedule or even other federal customers outside the schedule. And so that's really challenging. And one of the key things that we've seen in contractors that do this right really benefit from it is they do a labor category mapping so that they map them from the HR system to what they do commercially to what they want to offer to GSA. And even though we're talking about post-award now, it's important to do that pre-award, because post-award, that allows you to assess whether your pricing practices have remained the same. So if you have multiple labor categories flowing into one labor category, as it's described in the GSA schedule, it can get very, very complex, very fuzzy, very difficult for you to actually understand what your pricing is and whether you're still in compliance. So the first thing would be a compliance program. It's good to think about that pre-award, again, but to have that post-award is key. And so how often are you periodically looking at your pricing to see if you need to update your CSB disclosures? How often are you monitoring for price reduction clause compliance in terms of the systems and processes and controls that you have from a business infrastructure perspective to make sure that you not only can identify a price reduction clause, but you can identify it real time, contemporaneously during contract performance? It's one thing to be able to pull data from a system and see that maybe you triggered it, but the requirement is that you notify the GSA technically within 15 days of identifying problems with your pricing and then offer that same pricing. And in the services world, that's a very, very difficult thing to do. So we recommend,
because it's everything's complex, it's unique to each project, all those kind of things, right?
It's very, very difficult to do. And that's why going back to kind of an ounce of prevention type mentality, get this set up the way that you want, get all your disclosures in, and then negotiate a contract that you're going to be able to live with. Because if you don't think about the post-award compliance pre-award, then you're going to be fighting an uphill battle, and you're actually going to open yourself up to a lot more risk, audit risk, financial risk, or even reputational risk if you have problems down the road and it becomes a high-profile matter.
And you guys help folks with their compliance programs and that sort of stuff?
We do. We do. I mean, you know, and by the way, one size does not fit all. Every company is different, how they're set up, the services or products they offer, how large they are. You have to size the program for something that's palatable for the company, but also meets the requirements of GSA. And so what that really requires is whether you're a company doing $100,000 a year in revenue under the schedules or $100 million, and we've done it for both, looking at what the requirements are, which can vary depending on how you negotiated the contract. And so you can't just, there's no cookie cutter template approach. You want to be wise about how you spend your time and what you do and right size the compliance program to meet the key areas of compliance.
Right. So they are connected. There's a nexus between the contract you negotiate and the compliance program you have to create. And you do the better job up front, your compliance program can reflect that, the parameters and things you have to be concerned. Is that fair to say or not?
It is. And what that'll keep you out of, there's the pre-award audits that we talked about in connection with the option extension primarily. But then there's also post-award audits. And that's where GSA IG auditors are coming in and looking to make sure that you're just complying with the key terms and conditions of the contract. And that's a little bit different than reviewing it to provide the contracting officer in the case of a pre-award with, you know, an opinion as to whether the prices are fair and reasonable. And a post-award audit is not a situation that you want to be in. Pre-award, you might be unlucky and be drawn and be selected for a pre-award audit. Some people might consider that luck, actually, to make sure that they actually have their practices in order and they can say that they were audited. It could help them down the road if somebody has a different opinion. But post-award, that's when they come in and they really just see, okay, did you comply with the price reduction clause or not? In the products world, could be Trade Agreements Act. It could be a variety of other things, but focused a little bit more on services today.
It's a tantamount to sort of an investigation, right? They're looking through the stuff.
It's the next best thing. That's right. They're coming in, they're asking for a bunch of data, and they're going to look hard at what your disclosures were. And if your practices are not in line with what you disclosed to the government and or you have not had a good compliance program to monitor for price reductions, that's going to hit you. And that hurts more because then they'll assume that any price reductions that have occurred should remain throughout the contract period that they're looking at, which, again, it could not just be a year, but if they suspect a problem over the entire contract period, then you would go all the way back to the start of that period. And then every time you sold that labor category or that widget,
right?
Then it just adds up and it can become very costly, particularly if you're doing a fair amount of volume under the schedules.
Yeah, so from your perspective, I wanted to give you a last question to talk about. So we see the disconnect, square peg, round hole services. We see the increasing complexity of services. We see the requirement for competition at the task order level. Where do you think services are headed on the GSA schedule? Do you think there's an opportunity for reform or what?
Well, I think there's an opportunity for reform. It's a very difficult question to answer. Where I think we're headed right now is I think we're headed into a period of uncertainty. I think the GSA has rightly discovered that there are a lot of issues that could be resolved and could be better, and they're in the process of assessing that. Unfortunately, though, I think that their focus has been a little bit more weighted on the government customer than on the contractor. And so I'm concerned about what might come from some of the newer initiatives that we've been hearing about in the market, some of which we've talked about. So my advice is, right now, I don't think anything's going to change overnight. And so I say stay the course with the best practices. Do a thorough pricing analysis. Disclose your practices well. Develop a compliance program and execute that compliance program well. And if you do those things, then you're at least going to, steady state be in the same situation we are, which is unfortunately a fair amount of uncertainty in the market. I think what we have to do is, Roger, through the coalition and in other channels, do the best job we can speaking with one voice from a contractor community to try to make sure that any solutions or changes that come about at GSA, particularly for services contractors, come about in a way that's a balanced approach that makes good sense.
And I want to thank my guest today, Tony Fuller. Tony is a principal at Baker Tilly, and Tony heads up Baker Tilly's Government Contractor Advisory Services Practice here in Washington, D.C., and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.